White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 791. The White Rocket Babylon 5 Review Podcast is brought to you by people like you, our Patreon.com family. To join the ranks and help us keep the show going, visit www.b5review.com. That's www.b5review.com and click on the button to become a patron.
It's the White Rocket Babylon 5 Review Podcast. Reviewing the entire Babylon 5 series, plus Crusade and everything else. Now here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and Andy Fix.
Live from the telepath section of Down Below, it's the White Rocket Babylon 5 Review Podcast. I am your host, Van Allen Plexico. I wish he'd come up with that little clever intro bit earlier in the series. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Andy Fix. How are you tonight, Andy?
Van, I'm doing just fine. How are you doing tonight?
Good, good, good. I wish I'd come up with that little bit earlier because of, think of some of the places that we could have been coming from back in the first couple of seasons. Oh, the Shadow Capital on Zaha Doom. Live broadcast from there.
Ringside from the Mutai.
Oh, ringside from the Mutai would be fantastic. Lord. Well, we missed out, but we'll see. Well, anyway.
We'll have to go back and edit that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. We go back and just randomly drop a few in there. That would be fun. Tonight we have episode 507, which is season 5, episode 7. Did I not put the title down? Strange Relations. Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. Oh, it's season 5. They all kind of run together, this part of the series. We have a lot to say about that, I'm sure. I'm your host, Van Allen Plexico. Our show, I just want to remind everybody, we do not have ads. We are entirely produced by and kept on the air by our great patrons. Go to www.patreon.com and look for White Rocket Reviews, or just go to www.b5review.com and click on the button to become a patron. It'll carry you straight there. And we appreciate every one of you, every bit of what you're doing to keep us going. I also remind you that we have a spoiler section at the very end, and we hold it until after the spoiler sound. So I think that's all our business to take care of. Let's see. We have our news section that I'm skipping past because I'm just not really together tonight. I apologize. Our news. Is there anything at all going on in Babylon 5 news right now?
The only thing that I heard was JMS did address. Somebody brought up the reboot on Twitter, and JMS did address that. He said it's just been a string of bad luck. You know, first we had the writer's strike. And then we had the buyout, and then we had the possible merger. He says, hopefully when they finally get this merger nonsense behind us, because they're not doing that now, hopefully that will clear up soon, and we will get a yay or a nay on this sometime soon. But he basically says, I don't know what's going on. We won't know until, you know, everything, all the dust settles.
Right. So we're just in a holding pattern still.
Right, but he did address it directly, so that's not a rumor or anything like that. That's Joe actually saying, yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Right. Well, I mean, this is just going to keep playing on and on until there's some kind of resolution. And I mean, obviously the fan community is fairly divided on it anyway. But I keep arguing to them over and over. It's not for them. It's not for us, right? It's not made for people that already know the show. That's the thing. I think that's where the rub is. In fact, I haven't ever addressed it this way before, I don't think. But let me see if I can make my point clear here. I think that the problem is for people, for the existing fans, is existing fans say, I would like some kind of more Babylon 5. And so when the talk comes out that there is more Babylon 5 maybe coming, but it's like a reboot of the series rather than like more of the series we already enjoyed, then they say, oh, no, that's not the more Babylon 5 I had in mind. I don't like that more Babylon 5, so I don't want that. You shouldn't do it. And I'm like, I think where the conflict is they're treating a new Babylon 5 for different fans like it's an unwanted more Babylon 5 for existing fans, and it's not the same thing, right?
Right.
If they did the telepath war with Bruce Boxleitner and Lita, right, that would be more Babylon 5 of what we've had. If they reboot the series with new actors, that's not for us. We've already seen Babylon 5. It's, if we want to watch it, that's fine, you know, but that would be for an entirely new audience of young people that are not going to watch the show we watch. And I just can't seem to get that through people's heads. I don't know if anybody can. That's,
and people have to realize that the Babylon 5 fan base was never as big as Star Trek or things like that. The Babylon 5 fan base wasn't really even enough to keep it going in syndication on its original run for the full five seasons. I mean, that was just a miracle we even got season 5.
Oh,
because the ratings just weren't there. We love it. It was a great show, but it, just not enough people outside of our little fan club were interested in watching it. So if they were to put millions upon, and TV shows these days are like movie productions. It's, you know, we're talking tens of millions of dollars per episode.
Yeah.
And if we want them to put that kind of money into Babylon 5 just to continue a story, you know, 30 years later.
No, they're never going
to
do that.
That's not going to fly. They have to be a little bit more realistic. So I would love to see Babylon 5 done with modern, you know, modern sensibilities, modern budgets, modern writing, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And see where they take it. It won't be our Babylon 5, but it will still be some Babylon 5.
Right. Right. And it won't be for us. It'll be for whoever they can bring in new. It will be the primary audience. We're a bonus. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I just would love to see a Babylon 5 that looks like The Expanse. And, of course, by the time they finally do it, The Expanse will be 5 or 10 years old, and it'll look like something else.
Right, right.
Just be incredible. So I really hope they can do it. But, oh, well, in any case, tonight we are here to talk about Strange Relations. I believe that's the one you said. I just haven't, I can't, I've told you before, the title of this part of the series, to me, they all just kind of run together.
Right.
Learning Curve, Strange Relations, Secrets of the Soul, it's all just a blur to me. It's all Byron and, Lita and...
Right. You know why that is? Because all the episodes, nothing really stands out in any of these episodes. You can't point to any of the episodes and say, oh, this is when that happened, except for the one with the janitors. But so far, there hasn't been anything that really sticks out, you know, like Severed Dreams any of that stuff. There's not even anything that was such a stinker that it stands up, like, you know, the Mutai or the Believers or whatever. So they're kind of all just very... I don't know what the word is.
That's a very good important point, though. Let's highlight what you just said. We're not just crapping on season 5. It's not just that season 5 nothing stands out in a good way. It's that nothing is particularly horrible so far either. It's just kind of there's nothing that you go, oh, not that one, but there's nothing that you go, oh, it's that one. We're not saying that season 5 is terrible. We're just saying it's just kind of okay. It's kind of there, and we're not super excited about it.
Right.
So, well, let's get into this one and see how we broke this one down. And of course, we'll get to do our favorite segment of the show, which is Andy guessing the rating for it. That's going to be so much fun as always. So, who's going to do the episode breakdown for this one?
The summary. I did last week, so you can do this week.
All right. Bester arrives to try to retrieve the refugee telepaths and unfortunately fails. First time I've ever rooted for Bester. Garibaldi confronts Lockley. Yeah, that's finally. Delenn chooses a bodyguard for Londo. And I'm going to add, there's a D plot in this episode. This is in fact, I would argue this is an episode with like a C plot and three D plots.
All right. The
D plot, Franklin gets a new job.
Yes. That was just barely touched on.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, and I don't know if that was something that they were tossing, Franklin a bone to give him something to do this season.
Yeah.
Or if that was just because they needed Franklin to introduce the plot point to Lockley later in this episode.
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel maybe it's a little bit of both. I suspect
because
it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, this job does come up, if I remember correctly, does come up for Franklin later in this season as well.
Yeah, in fact, I'll go ahead and say it now. There's a well, no, I can't. It's a spoiler thing. But yeah, it comes up, and it's part of the, I'll just say it's part of the advertising graphics for one episode later that wasn't very subtle. And if you knew anything about the show, you're like, yeah, I can tell where this is going. I'll get to that when the time comes, because I remember it very distinctly, but it's just kind of a spoiler right now. All right, so we have Robin Atkin Downs as Byron, of course. We have Walter Koenig as Bester, which you got to admit, seeing Walter Koenig's credit come up at the beginning, you got to be like, ooh, right?
Yeah.
That's something.
Just seeing his face on the screen again, it made it feel like Babylon 5 again, you know?
Yes.
That feeling's like, ooh, that's the guy I love to hate. And seeing him walk, you know, in there and give that little smarmy smile of his, it felt good again to hate him, you know?
It did. Well, I mean, think about it. Of the show's three biggest villains, he's the only one left at this point.
Right.
He's the only one left. Because Clark is dead and Morden is dead. And so all you have left is Bester.
Right. And he carries so much baggage from previous seasons with him that it's good to see some of that stuff again. You know, it kind of lifts the episode up a little bit, I think, because it brings in some of that stuff from the past that we can, you know, latch on to.
And I hadn't thought about this because we really haven't talked about the Psi-Corps since the end of the Earth War last season.
Yeah. Yep.
But I'm frankly kind of, I guess I'm surprised that it seemed like nothing changed when, you know, when Clark when Clark removed himself from office with extreme prejudice, and Lachinko's government took over. Apparently, the Psi-Corps and all their connection to Morden and the Shadows, everybody's like, "That's fine, no big deal, carry on."
I don't think any of that was ever made public. I don't think that left the Clark's office. I don't think anybody in that's currently in EarthGov has any idea that Psi-Corps is so downright evil.
But I mean, okay. But what about, didn't Sheridan go to Lachinko and go, "You need to know that Psi-Corps is like totally evil, and they were working with the Shadows"? But I guess her response would be the Who.
Right. Yeah. She didn't even know that war happened.
Oh God, it's so frustrating. Well, in any case, those are the two main guest stars. There may have been somebody, one or two else, but that was the gist of it. All right. So production number 507 originally aired February 25th, 1998. So this entire season airs in 1998, pretty much. Written by JMS, directed by John C. Flynn III. So this is a John Flynn helmed episode, which I thought was interesting. And here we go, Andy. What was the P5 rating, do you think? And again, to remind the audience, back when the show first aired, they did a poll every episode. They did a poll in on the Lurker's Guide website, and on that poll, they asked people to rate the show between 1 and 10, and somehow ended with a 2-digit decimal, which I'm not exactly sure how that played out, but okay. And so Andy gets to try to guess what the show's aggregate average rating was back in 1998. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, Andy, how did the fans rate whatever the crap the name of this episode is? Strange Relations. How'd they rate it? Do your algorithm. Do your sorcery.
I'm gonna guess. I'm gonna go with the same base that I have for the past two episodes, but I'm going to give it a Bester bump.
Okay.
So I'm gonna go with I'm gonna say it was 7.5 plus, I'm gonna say 0.25 for Bester. I'm gonna say 7.75. Maybe. I'll go 7.75. I don't think it would be as high as an 8. It's somewhere between 7.75 and 8. I'll go low. So 7.75.
Ladies and gentlemen, every week Andy astounds us with his sorcery. You are a warlock, sir. It is impressive.
I'm a technomage.
Yes. He says 7.75. He is within 1/10 of 1 point. It was 7.84. So wow. A slight less than one tenth of 1 point was the difference.
I wanted to go as high as 8 because, you know, it had Bester in it, but I don't think that this season gets a whole lot of love from the fans.
So. No. And actually, I think 7.84 is about as high as this part of the season really gets.
Probably so.
Yeah. So, all right. You said you didn't really have any random factoids this time around.
You know, I do have one. It's very minor, but I thought it was kind of a cool one. They showed Lockley in her Star Fury. And I love that everybody has their own personal Star Fury, their own personal helmets and stuff like that. I think that's just so cool.
Yep.
And Lockley had a phoenix on the side of her helmet. And I was reading an interview with her, and she said that she went straight to Joe and said, "You've been talking to my mom. You've been talking to my girlfriends. You've been talking to somebody in my family or my friend, my circle of friends." And he says, "What are you talking about?" She goes, "My helmet. I got the script that you just handed out today, and it says in there specifically that I have a phoenix on the side of my helmet." He goes, "Yeah." She goes, "I grew up loving the myth of the phoenix, the legend of the phoenix." She goes, "I used to doodle the phoenix all over my school books. I used to embroider the phoenix on my jeans and my jackets and stuff like that." She goes, "I to this day love the phoenix."
Wow.
And he says, "Well, it just seemed appropriate to me. That's all." So I thought that was kind of neat.
That is. Well, I that is really cool about her. Absolutely. I do wonder where he came up with it, in the sense of, like, is she like reborn after the Earth War as a new Earth Alliance loyal soldier again or something, you know? And
yeah,
I don't know
if he's addressed that anywhere else, but that she did not mention anything about that in that interview. She just brought that point up. The only thing that he said about it was it just felt appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I did notice that. Yeah, that's really cool. All right. So I wanted to point out a few things. Dr. Franklin is the only cast member still wearing the black Army of Light uniform. Did you notice that?
I did notice that. Didn't Zach have his on?
You're right. I was thinking that the station was back under Earth Alliance control with Lockley there. And so...
It's not.
Okay. I just, for some reason, was thinking they would go back to Earth Alliance people kind of... I guess Steven resigned his commission, right? Doesn't work for Earth Force anymore?
No, he does not. Nope.
Okay, so he was basically just the staff doctor now for the station.
I don't recall anybody still wearing... I think Lockley's the only one still in the Earth Force uniform. I'm trying to think back. I know the security guards are still wearing their green. And the people in CNC are still wearing the gray shirt and the black pants.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in either uniform, Army of Light or the Earth Force uniform. So I can't think of anybody else on board that station that's still wearing the Earth Force uniform except for her. And Babylon 5 is not under Earth control at all. They even said, you know, that this is when she was talking about transferring the telepath back to Earth, you know, Earth space or Earth controlled territory. She said once they leave here, you know, they have to go through quarantine before they, you know, are returned to Earth territory. So she wasn't counting Babylon 5 as part of Earth Force. That's I think strictly the Galactic Council or the Galactic Alliance or whatever, Interstellar Alliance territory.
Right. That's the thing, is that the show politically gets very complicated at this point. And that's not a bad thing. I kind of like it, you know. I think it's kind of cool.
Right.
But
right.
It does get politically complicated at this point because you have so many overlapping jurisdictions and overlapping governments that it's...
Yep.
And humans that are on the Babylon 5 side. I mean, at least when they were at the... You know, when they were having the Civil War, they were on two clearly distinct sides, and you knew there was this group and this group. Now, it's more like a Venn diagram, you know?
Right.
It was bicycle wheels before. Now it's kind of a Venn diagram. And so it's much more complicated when there's overlap. So... Yeah, it is kind of like Lockley's a free agent brought in to run the station, but still in the Earth. I don't understand it, but fine, whatever, you know.
Right.
I don't get it. So, anyway, in fact, it's kind of like Babylon 5 is currently the Galactic White House, and she's like
she's like the chief of staff.
Yeah, but if she was a governor of a state running, it's weird. I don't really get it. Yeah.
It would be like Joe Biden having a Republican as his chief of staff.
Yeah. Well, that's true too.
Like that. I don't know.
No. Yeah. Again, it's complicated. It's hard to kind of nail this down. So, well, anyway, cool stuff.
Anyway,
all right.
Cool stuff, which makes me all the more frustrated that Joe didn't, or that JMS didn't lean into that. You know that.
Yes.
So much potential.
Yeah, it's true. Have we seen Veer yet this season at all?
He was in the Very Long Night of Londo Mollari.
So once in six episodes. Yep. Let's see. It's one less than the number. So yeah, six. This was the sixth episode. Have we seen Lanier more than like once? I don't think so.
Nope. Lanier left for.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
The on the shock training, and we haven't seen them since.
Yeah. What is the? I mean, I guess are they just saving money or something? Or I don't understand it.
Yes.
But whatever.
That's 100% it.
Okay. I tell you who's getting a lot of airtime though, Zach.
Yeah, he is.
He's in like every episode.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Yep.
The Centauri ship that exploded was the same class of ship as the one the Emperor visited Babylon 5 on in The Coming of Shadows. It's also one we saw bombarding the Narn homeworld with the mass drivers. According to the miniatures, because I used to have one, I built one, but I don't have it anymore, it's a Primus.
Ah, gotcha.
Centauri Primus cruiser. The ones that look like crescent moons are Vorchons, and we're going to see them, spoiler, we're going to see them a lot later in the season, but...
Right.
And by the way, yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No,
I was
ahead.
Just going to say, speaking of the Centauri, they made a point in this episode that it's really important for the Centauri to be in the Alliance. And the rest of this season is going to prove, the second half of this season, I think, proves very interesting along those lines. I won't say what happens, but that's something that is political and interesting that we've been kind of wanting. So we do get a little bit of that.
Right. I just wanted to point out that. Did it feel like the destruction and the sabotage of the Centauri major capital ship like that getting destroyed should have been at least a B plot, not like a D or an E plot that it ended up being? I mean,
yes, nobody cared. 5 seconds after it happened, nobody cared.
Right. It was just a 2 second scene of them saying, "Okay, we're leaving," and then boom, and then it's like, well, wait a minute. That's a major development that should have been at least the B plot, if not the A plot of this episode.
Yes. No, I agree. I hadn't thought of it. I hadn't thought about it, but you're absolutely right. It absolutely should have. It should have been a bigger deal. Let's see. So it's mentioned for the first time on the show that Sheridan has had three wives. And I've told this story a long time ago, but for those that weren't listening or back at that time or whatever, I'll just recount it very quickly, that the story goes that JMS realized this because he was at a convention and somebody stood up and said, "I just want to congratulate you for how smart it was of you that you had Sheridan have three wives, and one was military, one was worker, and one's religious." And and JMS just stared back at him for a minute and then said, "I'm smarter than I thought I was," because he didn't do that on purpose. According to him, he didn't do that on purpose. It just happened.
Right.
Which is hilarious.
And, I used to hate the fact that he made her his wife, because it's like, oh, come on. That's she's never mentioned before. He never mentioned that he, had another wife. None of that stuff. But then when she says it was only for 3 months, it was right out of military school. We didn't really want to make a big deal of it. I can see how that could easily get brushed under the rug as, just something I did in my youth. I ran off to Vegas, got married for a weekend, and then we got divorced, and then that's it, never bring it up again. So,
like Ross and Rachel kind of thing.
right. I didn't hate it as much this time as I did last time.
Yeah.
It didn't grate on my nerves as much.
Well, I think part of it is we know what comes later, which is I'm not going to say, and it's nothing big. And then, if it was going somewhere big, that might be a little bit different. But it's just kind of an incidental character point that doesn't really make any difference. So, but I mean, I guess it matters in the sense of that's the reason why he knew of her and felt she would be a good choice. But he could just as well have said that she served under Sheridan on a ship on the Agamemnon or something, you know, and he knew her that way.
Right, right.
So, whatever,
yeah,
it's fine.
It just adds a little bit of spice to the to the mix. But how disappointing is it that the first season, you know, the big mystery was there is a hole in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second season is what do you want? And then, you know, the third season is if you go to Zahadum, you'll die. I mean, every season has had like a big mystery that has had a huge payout. And so far, the only mystery in season 5 that they start off with was, you know, what's their relationship? And then it's like, oh, they're married. And it's like,
that's it.
That's all that you had going for you was, I mean, it just makes the show feel that much tinier that, you know, it doesn't have a big hook like all the other seasons had.
It's true. No, you're right. Absolutely true. Let's see what else we not talked about. There's a reference of Connolly. Connolly appeared in By Any Means Necessary, the head of the Dock Workers Guild. So that's a good callback to season 1. Still there.
Oh yeah, that's right. I remember that. Yeah,
I hate it for Connolly that I think it's just she, right? I hate that she's still she hadn't gotten a better job in 5 years.
Right.
Poor thing.
She was the blonde girl from that episode. I kind of liked her.
Yeah. What did you think about the Descartes joke that Bester told?
That was really bad.
Yeah, I'll leave it at that. Apparently, it was told at the Hugo Awards ceremony where JMS got the Hugo for Severed Dreams. So maybe that's where he heard it and decided to use it in the show.
That could be. It did not make my funniest moment.
No. It was told by Neil Barrett Jr. when he was Toastmaster at the 97 Hugos, where JMS got the Hugo for Severed Dreams. Let's see. Doodle-doodle-doodle. What do you think about Jakar now working as Londo's bodyguard?
I thought that was hilarious. I thought that was a neat twist on their relationship.
Yeah.
In fact, that made one of my categories. I thought that was pretty neat. I wish, again, it was almost an afterthought in this episode. You know, that should have been the B plot. You know, that should have been a much bigger deal. There should have been a lot more political fallout from this, and they just. It just was like, yeah, hey, by the way, why don't you be his bodyguard?
And Jakar's like, it'd be funny, sure. That's his motivation for taking the job is, that'd be funny.
Right. There was no buildup to it. It didn't carry any impact. You know, the revelation didn't carry any impact at all because there just wasn't enough around it to make us. They just kind of like dropped it on us. And it would, great, they had great material that they just didn't fully, embrace.
I'll be honest with you, Andy. I feel like this season, JMS is writing. It feels like he's tired.
It does. I agree.
It feels a little bit like he's been doing this a long time at this point, and you take a break. I was going to say a minute ago, because you mentioned the view from the gallery. You know, over and over, people tend to believe that the strongest episodes in season 5 are the kind of standalone episodes. And, I mean, that's important. Because Babylon 5 made its hay off of the big, long serial saga. So when your best episodes of that kind of a show are the episodes whose structure is totally different from what usually works for that show, you know what I mean? It's like, that's not a good sign because that's not what you do best. When you're doing your best work doing something you don't do best, it really is disturbing for the big picture. That view from the gallery, and there's like two or three other ones coming up that are the ones that are popular. So,
JMS spent 10 years coming up with this intricate 5-year plan of this novel that he wanted to put on TV and working out of all the fine details and all the intricate plot lines and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then when that got truncated into 4 seasons, and then they said, okay, you need to come up with something new for next season. I mean, the poor guy had a matter of weeks to come up with something. How do you match what it took you 10 years to build for the first 4 seasons, and then how do you come up with something that can be held up next to that and be seen as equal to that and be as intricate and as well loved as that in just a matter of weeks? So I don't blame JMS for season five. I mean, like you said, he was tired, and he didn't have time to come up with something more worthy of Babylon 5.
Well, I mean, because in every case, you can see where he was trying to go, and yet he kind of has to rush it. He has to do it on the cheap. He doesn't have the same characters he had to work with before. It's just he's hamstrung at every turn. So I'm disappointed in, you know, how he does whatever, but I'm also cognizant of the fact that he really was kind of in a bind. Plus, I'm glad that it's, you know, it's really cool that he proved he could write 3.5 straight seasons of the same show without a break. That's incredible. But it also, by the time you get to where we are now, you can see the value in having a writer's room.
Right, right.
Little fresh blood, just mix it up a little bit. Somebody to go, hey, why don't we do it this way instead? You know, I get the sense that JMS doesn't like having somebody else in the room that says, hey, why don't we do it a different way from the way you're thinking of? I don't think he likes that.
Right. Well, he doesn't want anybody else messing with his vision. Problem is that his vision was wrapped up already, and this is, you know, this is something new, and he needs a new vision, and he can't do it all himself.
I think that's exactly right. So again, I'm not really blaming him so much as just he was very stubborn about how he wanted to do the show. But after 5 years of without hardly a break, you know, it's just going to get, you know, again, he has ideas, but I just feel like they're very by the numbers by this season. That's kind of what I'm trying to get at, is that it feels like there's some good ideas in here, but they're executed by the numbers rather than with a lot of flair and verve and energy like some of the things we saw in season, even season one had a little more, you know, flair to it in places. It was new and fresh, you know, so.
Absolutely. And that's what it all seems stale.
Yeah. And again, it's, if there were at least a couple other writers in the writer's room, they could say, why don't we do it this way? And he'd be like, oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Right.
You know, when I've done a number of collaborative books with other authors, and they come up with stuff that I'm like, oh, yeah, I would have done this boring thing just thinking that's how you do it. And you came up with some, you know, thing I'd never thought of. That's great. So,
yep.
But, you know. So, let's see. Unanswered questions. Who tried to assassinate Londo?
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, don't know. We know that the regent back on Centauri Prime has a keeper. So does his health problems have anything to do with the keeper, or is he just dying anyway and the keeper is sucking out the last of his life, or we don't know.
I my personal opinion is having a keeper just it takes a toll on anybody who is being kept.
Yeah. Well, look at Londo in the beginning and in War Without End. I mean, he looks like he's aged about 50 years in just a couple of years.
Right.
How powerful is Leta now?
Pretty darn powerful.
Yeah. I think she's more powerful than anybody realizes.
Right. And, well, I think Bester is just starting to realize that because he didn't push the issue with her.
Yeah.
He and just the six telepaths. He was like, you know what? I'm going for backup.
Yeah. I think that's probably smart, too.
Yeah.
What medical experiments did Byron's people undergo? And I have a little note. See Jason Ironheart. Because we know that Psycor has no problem doing some pretty radical, you know, experiments on their own people.
Right. No, they have zero compunctions about doing stuff like that. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, they're like, all right, let's figure it out.
Yeah. Let's see. What did Bester mean when he said that Byron knew all about turning against somebody? What we there apparently is some history there that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, and Bester has a very specific hatred of Byron personally.
Yes.
And I will say that scene between Bester and Byron, just that brief scene, Bester or who's the actor? Chekhov. Who's the actor that
Oh, Walter Koenig?
Walter Koenig, yes, I'm sorry. Walter Koenig brought out the best acting I've seen Byron do all season. And he didn't even say anything. He just sat there.
Yeah.
But just the look on his face and his reaction to Bester, you could tell that there was a mutual hatred and that Byron was legitimately afraid of Bester. I mean, I thought that was a very powerful scene between those two. And it made me yearn for something more of that Byron than the Byron given the soliloquy or quoting Shakespeare or doing whatever else he's been doing.
Yeah, all the insufferable stuff that JMS makes him do. I don't blame Robin Atkin Downs for a lot of this, honestly.
No, I don't either. I think he's a fine actor, and he proved it in that scene right there.
Yeah, I think so. All right, let's see. Last couple of things. Oh, the last thing. Couldn't the telepaths just change their citizenship and thus escape Bester's jurisdiction?
That's a good question. I don't know the legalities or the politics of that.
Yeah,
universe,
once again.
I don't know. Right. I mean, if they're fugitives, United States will go after you if you're a fugitive, no matter where you go. I mean, you know, we'll try to hunt you down. So mm-hmm. I don't think them just changing their nationality. I mean, that's I don't know how that would work.
Yeah. Let's see. Just got a couple of JMS speaks.
Oh, hold on. I got a couple questions.
Oh, good. Go ahead. Excellent.
Yeah. So when Zach is talking to Londo and he's saying how cool it would be for him to be emperor, he says, yeah, it'd be really cool. And just imagine Emperor Mulari the first. Wouldn't that be cool? And Londo says, well, no, it'd actually be the second. But wouldn't it be Emperor Londo the first?
I'm not sure how that works.
Right, because the kings of Europe always take their first. They first don't go name. By their family name. They go by their first name. So it's interesting that he would be Emperor Mulari and not Emperor Londo the first. So that was a question I had. And then my other one is, when Leto was stealing borrowing the medication from MedLab for the telepath, she said they're running low on necessities like food and clothes and medicine. Where are they getting their hair care
products? They don't seem to have a problem with that.
They're not running low on that at all. I mean, maybe if they would quit spending all their credits on their hair gel, they could buy some food and clothes.
Amen to that. I know. And I'm wondering, how many clothes are they buying? I mean, how do they... And are they? Right. Do they have like one change of outfit in there? How are they doing laundry? They don't have any money. And there's a lot I don't understand about the. Do they have a place they can take a bath? Are there public facilities or something? You got to think there's some kind of public facilities down there. Yeah. Are they waiting in line to take a shower or use a bathroom? Or I just don't understand down below very well.
No, it's very poorly defined, very vague.
Yeah, that's right. Okay,
if they can lose a whole floor down there, you know,
this is true.
They can lose track of Gray 17. I mean, so anything can go on down there.
This is true. Did you have another one? I don't want to overrun you there. I'm sorry.
Nope, that's all I had. Just those two.
All right. There's two things from JMS. This is a very, very short JMS speak section. One is he points out that there was a slight change in the main title theme music starting with this episode. I got to go back and watch it again with the volume turned up because I hadn't noticed that. But he said that he had been sick when they did the original title mix, and so he didn't have a chance to like do his own edit of it or something. But he said he had to go in and redo some audio for this episode and said while he was at it, he just went ahead and pulled out all the music parts for the theme and redid the whole, rebalanced it, like in the mix. And he says he thinks that it pulled out some parts of the music that got buried previously. It's all the same, just in different perspectives. Like basically he changed the graphic equalizer on it, is what he did.
Right. And I did notice that a lot of the dialogue that had been more prominent in previous episodes wasn't nearly as you know, in your face as it was. The music kind of played over it a lot louder. It was hard to hear some of the dialogue.
Yeah. The other thing was, and I'm going to go back and check that. The other thing was that song at the end that the telepaths were singing. Somebody asked JMS, is that a traditional song? And he says, no, I came up with it for this episode and designed it to sound like any of a zillion other such songs out there so it would sound familiar. I have nothing else to say about that song right now. It will come up again soon.
All right.
Before we get into the categories, I have to ask you to rate this week's Byron annoying meter on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 being he's a pretty cool dude, 10 being feed him to the Pac-Mara, How annoying was Byron in this episode?
You know, I'm going to have to go with my P10 rating. It was a 7.75. That soliloquy he gave, and it made one of my categories. That was just atrocious. That was so insufferable. I wanted to reach through my television and just punch him in the throat.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I had him sitting on 6 the entire episode, and then they sang that song, and I jacked him up to 9. He went to 9.
I didn't hold that song against him because that wasn't really all fire, and that was just everybody sounding annoying. But yeah, when he gave that soliloquy, the whole bit about the, you know, she just wanted to know when's the last time he slept. And he said 5 or 6 lifetimes ago when I was sitting by. Oh my God, that was just awful.
Yeah, that was so bad.
I really wanted to just throttle him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not Robin Atkin Downs, but Byron. Byron needed strangling.
Right, right. Agreed.
It's like, you know, there's that joke where they said Stevie Ray Vaughan is dead and we can't get John Bon Jovi near a helicopter. And I keep thinking Warren Keffer is dead and we can't get Byron into a freaking Star Fury near a shadow ship. It's so sad.
Oh my God.
Hey Byron, just sit right here in Med Lab. It'll all be fine. I'm gonna hook this alien machine up to you, but pay no attention. It's not gonna do anything. It's fine. No, it's all good. Are you trying to read my mind? No. I promise. It's fine. All right, Andy.
I heard that joke about Bon Jovi. That was just mean.
That's a Dennis Leary joke, of course.
Dennis Leary joke.
Yeah. All right. What was your high point of this episode?
High point of the episode for me was when Lockley decked Garibaldi.
Yes.
I thought that was awesome. That was so cool. Because it came out of nowhere. I mean, she just turned around and just walloped him right in the face. And you can see he just stopped and said, all right, I gotta respect that. I'm fine. I'm good now.
I think you're right. I mean, yeah, it came out of nowhere, and I'd forgotten, and I was shocked. I'm like, oh my gosh, look at Lockley just put the dude down on the floor.
Right.
Yeah, and Garibaldi's reaction was not, I want to beat you up. It was more like, oh my gosh.
Right.
He was shocked. I mean, as shocked as we were. So.
Yep.
Mine was, I first said, when it looked like Bester was actually going to carry Byron in the telepass away, that was my high point. But then I said, well, that's just mean. That's just too mean-spirited. I'm going to say when Lita stood up to Bester, because that's been coming a long time, and we needed that, and especially when she kind of had a knuckle under to him, you know, a few episodes or a season ago.
Right.
Because things had gotten so bad for her. But again, this continues to highlight how everybody on Babylon 5 is bad to her. That is one thing I will say for Byron the Telepath. You can say all you want bad about Byron the Telepath, and we're going to. But one thing I will say is that they do treat Lita nicer than anybody else. And
they do.
And
absolutely.
She needs that.
Yep.
She deserves it.
She absolutely does. And you can tell. I mean, she actually smiled, like big smiles a couple times. When's the last time we saw Lita smile like that? I don't ever remember it. I mean, she feels appreciated and loved. I mean, it's no wonder why she went over to that side so quickly and so, you know, fully.
Yes. No, absolutely. I agree. What this is going to be tough. What was your low point of this episode?
My low point, and I mentioned it just a little bit ago, was Byron's soliloquy. It took me right out of the show, and I just shook my head, and I'm like, see, this is why everybody hates Byron.
That's it.
Because of scenes like this. It was so bad and so egregious and just so awful. I mean, and even Lita, in the scene, she was like, I couldn't make any sense of what you just said. If there's a point in there,
yeah,
it was
she did.
Over my head.
She said that.
So it was
so
like,
good.
You just wasted. The scene in the elevator with Zach was a better scene than this. I mean, it was just, oh my goodness.
That's
it was
good.
Frustrating. Yeah, it was frustrating. Well, so that was my low point.
I can't argue with that, but I will say I had to say the singing at the end. That song at the end, JMS even wrote it. I mean, it was no hiding place. I went to the rock to hide my face. The rock cried out, no hiding place. It was like, it was like, I agree with him that he kind of did everything that those kind of songs do, But the thing is, those kind of songs usually do a couple of lines of lament or whatever, and then there's kind of a little hopefulness or something, or there's a...
Yeah.
Those songs usually change gear as you go along. It's not just the same relentless thing. And this song was just the same relentless lyrics, like, we'll go to a better place. Oh, this life sucks. We're all going to die, but we'll go to a better place. And I'm just like, come on. Somewhere in there, you gotta change it up a little bit. It's just awful. So, yeah, that was so bad.
Yeah.
What was your most Babylon 5 scene?
Most Babylon 5 scene was Jakar becoming Alondo's bodyguard, because that just ties into the whole relationship they've had for the entire, you know, 4.5 seasons now.
Yeah, it's true. You always have better ones than me, it seems like. I just had the Primus exploding, because that was a really good, a Centauri spaceship blowing up is a very Babylon 5 thing. So
I
thought,
sure.
There you go. Yeah. I wish, and I agree with you, I wish that more had been made of it. That should have been a bigger deal.
Yeah.
Than it was. So, all right. What was your favorite character moment this time?
Favorite character moment was when Leeta stood up to Bester. I thought that was really cool. It really showed how far along Leeta's come, you know, as a character,
yeah.
You know, not just with her psychic abilities, but also with her having the backbone to stand up to Bester. You know, that's something that she couldn't have done even as recently as last season. She couldn't stand up to Bester like that. So I thought that was really cool character moment for her.
Yeah, and that is a good point, that last season they were in a similar situation and she had to kind of give in and be and wear that little badge again, which I think also begs the question, when she takes the badge off, was that just like a temporary thing to be nice to the telepaths, or was that supposed to be permanent, right? What is the significance beyond surface?
I think that was her... That was signifying that she was buying into and joining Bester full-heartedly.
Yeah. No, no.
I don't think. Or not Bester, Byron. I'm sorry.
Byron. Starts with a B.
Byron. Starts, yep. Right. I don't think that was a superficial thing on her part or on JMS's part. I think that was completely intentional for both of them.
Yeah, I agree. My favorite character moment was when Jakar accepted Delenn's suggestion that he be Londo's bodyguard. This really was a plot that came out of nowhere and I was not expecting it, but, I give JMS credit though for trying to find ways to match up these characters that play well against each other. Right. Cause we just talked about this last episode and we need to give him credit now. Cause remember last episode we were saying you need to have Londo and Jakar together more and you need to have Lockley and Garibaldi together more. And this episode did give us both of those things, or at least pointed us in that direction. So I give this episode credit at least for doing what we just suggested.
Right. But think of all the great character moments we've had between Jakar and Londo over the past several seasons. All those pivotal, very powerful scenes and moments that we've had. This should have been one of those, you know? That the scene that these two actors and these two characters could have had with Jakar coming to the realization that, yes, this was a good idea, and then Londo accepting it as well, I think it was a huge missed opportunity. I think they played it too lately, and like I said, it was they buried the lead. I mean, this was buried way down at the bottom. This was like the Z plot, and it could have been such a powerful scene with those two, or a couple of scenes with those two, and throwing Mira Furlan. You know, good Lord, the three of them, you know, hashing out that deal and coming to the realization that this is something that needs to be done.
Yeah.
I think that could have been something really special, and it got the short shrift.
No, you're right. You're right. All right, let's see. Just a couple left. Funniest moment. There were a couple, I guess.
There were a couple. I actually wrote down two of them. The one was, I mentioned it earlier, when Byron gives this big romantic soliloquy to Leeta and is trying to woo her, and she looks at him and she goes, if there was a point in all that, I completely missed it. And he's just like, damn it. And then the other one was when Zach was talking about the telepaths. He goes, they've kept their noses so clean you could eat off of them. And then really quick, just off in the corner of the screen, if you look at Steven's face, he's like, ew. It was just hilarious. Just that brief split second when the camera, you know, panned across to Lockley, you could see Steven just sneering. It was hilarious.
Well, and Lockley commented, right? She said something like, that wasn't exactly the
image that I wanted. Yeah,
I wanted, right? But whatever. Right.
But Franklin said as much without saying anything. I don't know if that was the actor doing that or if that was written in the script or what. But it was hilarious. He just gave a that's really gross look on his face.
I suspect that was spontaneous, but it was pretty good.
Right.
My funniest moment was Londo and Jakar at the end bickering over the aisle seat and trying to find like ways to justify that both of them should have the aisle seat. Like, but if I'm protecting you, I need to be on the outside. But you know, and they just going round and round. It's just good to have those two back going at each other again. That's a big part of this show. And when you don't have that, this show is really missing something important. So,
anytime that the camera's on both of them is going to be something special.
Yeah, and I think if there's anything that makes season 5 a legitimate Babylon 5 season, it's that Londo and Jakar are still on the show. Because out of all the big, colorful characters from the first, you know, few seasons, most of them are gone now.
Right.
But Londo and Jakar are the only ones really, are some of the only ones left. I mean, Sheridan has his moments, but you know, Delenn has her moments. Garibaldi has his moments, but really, that's no more Kosh, no more Morden, no more Susan, no more Marcus. So many of the big, colorful characters are gone, and so Londo and Jakar really have to kind of carry the load for the whole show now.
And it can be argued, and I think argued pretty strongly, that Babylon 5 is the story of those two characters and their development and their relationship. I mean,
yeah,
if you look at it, you know, people have said the Star Wars movies are really about Darth Vader or about Anakin Skywalker. That's what all the movies, I mean, the movies obviously are about what they're about individually, but if you look at the whole interconnected story, it's the story of Darth Vader. You could say that this Babylon 5 was the story of Jakar and Londo and how they navigated their differences and their relationship with each other.
Yeah, you could fairly say that. That's true. It was never my favorite thing about the show, though, but I understand that for a lot of people it is, and that's cool. And it just shows you how, you know, it shows you how good this show is, that there's stuff for everybody, you know, to a large degree.
Right.
All right, we're going to do who won and who lost the episode. So I'm curious, who do you think won the episode?
I think Lockley clearly won.
Ding, ding, ding.
On this episode, she found a way to save the telepath. She came to an accord with Delenn about her relationship with Sheridan. So I think Lockley clearly won because she got she found a way to keep the telepath from going with Bester. Mm-hmm. She came to an accord with Delenn over her relationship with Sheridan, and she got to punch Garibaldi in the face. So I think that's just a win
wow.
for her.
You make a very fine argument there. That's a good point. I think that's absolutely right. I would add Byron won, at least in terms of not having to get arrested and carried away for a little while. And he seems to be making some ground with Lita.
Yeah.
So I got Lockley and Byron won this time.
Yep.
I would say in the short term, Bester lost. But in the long term, Bester's kind of winning because he's not a war criminal right now. He's still a very high authority in the EarthGov, apparently.
Right, right. I have Bester being the loser of this particular episode.
Yeah, me too,
but
yes.
Also, Zach lost because Lita looked to him when they were taking away when they had finally arrested so many of the telepaths. And she walked into that room, and they were pleading to her for help, you know, with their eyes. And she looked at Bester, and Bester just gave her that smile. But then she looked at Zach as if to say, Zach, come on, buddy, help me out here. We have a connection or something. And Zach, you know, put his eyes down and kind of looked away from her. And, that was a slap in the face to her.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was Zach just admitting that he can't help her. And it was rough.
It was. Well, it's the other side of that, the third space conversation on the elevator.
Exactly. Exactly.
She had nothing for him there, though it wasn't her fault.
Right.
And he had nothing for her there, and he couldn't.
Yep.
It wasn't really his fault either, so.
Right. Absolutely.
It's just a sad situation with those two. I hate it for them both.
Yep.
So, yeah, Bester definitely lost this episode, though I think in the long run he's winning right now. And I had Garibaldi lost this episode because everywhere he turned, he kind of got down, what do you call it, dressed down.
Right.
By Lockley and...
Yeah, he got arrested by his former, you know, his former men.
Yeah,
you know,
and
they didn't want to take him, but they're like, you know what, boss, you're no longer our boss. So
when I always feel like Garibaldi is losing when he has to resort to, hey guys, it's me, remember? And he does that in this episode.
Yep, absolutely.
When he has to do that, it means he's run out of other options, and now he's just down to, hey, remember me? I used to be that guy that, you know, you liked and stuff. Yep. And worked for.
Yep.
Well. All right, that gets us to the rating, and this is going to be painful for some. I hate it. On a scale of 0 to 5, where do you rate Strange Relations, Andy?
I wanted to give this more than a 2.5, but I couldn't give it a 3. So I don't know. If I'm rating this in relation to the rest of Babylon 5, the rest of the four seasons, it's a 2.5. It can't get any better than that. If I'm rating this to, you know, just comparing it to the rest of season 5, it gets a 3. So it depends on how you want to look at it.
Wow.
This is one of the better season 5 episodes. It is not one of the better Babylon 5 episodes.
No. I'm going to be honest with you right now. There is no way I'm giving this episode a 3.
Yeah.
The episodes that I've given 3s to over the last 4 seasons, this is not one of them.
Right.
New.
New. Yeah, as a whole, I give this a 2.5.
A 3.
And that's only because of Bester.
Yeah, I was going to say a 3 is over halfway to me. That's leaning toward the good rather than the bad, and this is not leaning toward the good. I had this one 1.5.
Ooh.
But I added another 0.5 to it and very reluctantly raised it up to a 2. Largely for Bester. And for Lockley, for the fact that we get some Lockley Garibaldi, including the punch, for the fact that we get some Londo Jacquard, though in both cases, and particularly in Londo and Jacquard's case, it's more the promise of what's to come than what we got in this episode.
Right, right. It's hard to rate because maybe I'm being more generous than I should be, but. I think this was one of the better season 5 episodes, but it definitely was not. I don't know. It's hard for me to rate because I want to be nicer, but I don't know. If this were a season 1 episode, how would we rate it? I don't know.
This felt like a very transitional episode.
Right, but every episode this season has been a transitional.
Yeah, you're right. It's true.
It's like, you know, it's always the opening episode. The first one or two episodes of every season has always been that traditional episode or two. It seems like he can't get out of that gear.
Yeah. No, I think so. And this one just felt like nothing was resolved.
Right.
Nothing. Even in season 1, when it was transitional in the sense of Sinclair kicking the can down the road a couple of episodes every time, you know, Earth Force tried to do something to him and he'd find some clever way to delay it.
Right.
Even then, you'd have like a B plot or a C plot where something got resolved, like the monster got blown up or something. This episode, I tell you right now, this episode could have used an organic monster running around the station and Sheridan having to get a big laser gun and chase it. I never thought I'd say that. This episode could have used a good Muay Thai match. You know?
Yeah.
It needed something like that. My God.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that could have been said about every single one of the first 5 episodes. I mean,
it needed Londo and Lanier going to gamble and Londo pulling out his private parts to hold his drink or whatever. This is stuff that this show used to do, and it's just so it's like a grim death march in some places now.
Right, that's it exactly. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think this is JMS just writing the eulogy for Babylon 5.
The death pageant of the telepaths to a certain degree, and at least in terms of their plot or whatever. I'm not, no spoilers or anything, but it just feels like it's the baton death march of the telepaths, and they're dragging all of us with them.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think, and it's easy to look back 25, 30 years later and be critical of this and say and look and point out all the missed opportunities JMS had. But like I said just a little bit ago, he was writing this, you know, just weeks after the show was revived, and really, he didn't have time to sit down and look at all the pieces he had and to craft these intricate storylines for everybody. He just didn't have time. He had to start writing, and he had to start writing right now.
Yeah. So there are reasons, but it is what it is, and that's just how it is.
Right.
Yep. Andy, I'm going to thank our patrons real quick. We have great, great patrons, and they keep the show going. You can join their ranks by going to www.b5review.com and click on the big button to become a patron. Or you can just go to patreon.com, log into your account there, create an account there, and then just look for White Rocket. White Rocket Reviews, that's us. We do a lot of other stuff besides this Babylon 5 show. And so, but that's where the Patreon goes to, is this show. But we also, Andy, I don't know if you saw, I just posted a few days ago as a bonus for the patrons, my instant reaction audio, like 25 minutes, instant reaction to Dune Part 2.
I did see that. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, so John was going to do it with me, like we did Dune Part 1, but he's been really sick. I think that you passed the Drock plague on to him maybe somehow across space there from Ohio to Virginia where he lives. But he had apparently what you had, man. He was down, and so I went ahead and recorded it basically by myself, and we'll come back and do a more conversation. By the way, have you seen that movie yet?
I have not. I'm waiting for it to come to streaming. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really good.
I've got the big huge TV in my living room and surround sound and all that, so I'll be able to get almost the theater experience, but without having to go to the theater and mix with people.
Ah, gotcha. Mira and I love to do that. I went and got the biggest cheeseburger you've ever seen in your life and fries. And it was the comedy thing was I got it, I picked it up before the movie started, went in there and sat down and realized, dear Lord, there's no way I can eat this in the dark. I'll be eating the paper. I'll be getting it all over me. This is going to be a disaster. I'm just going to look like a 2-year-old coming, you know, when the lights come up and the movie's over, I'm just going to have it all over me. And so I'm like trying to eat this giant cheeseburger fast before the lights go down for the movie. And I'm just praying, just one more trailer. Cause they had the lights. They had most of the lights up for the trailers for some reason.
Right.
And I'm just like, come on, one more trailer. And I'm like, Mira's just sitting there with her popcorn, just cracking up, watching me try to eat this cheeseburger in 5 minutes. I got the last bite down and the lights went off and I'm like, oh, it was silly sad. But anyway,
I will say that I did see Godzilla Minus One, Minus Color in the theater.
Oh, good. Okay.
And it was awesome because I felt like a 10-year-old again. It was glorious. So.
I'm really looking forward to Godzilla Kong 2, whatever it's going to be, whatever they want to call it. Godzilla and Kong team up against the monkeys or something, whatever it is. I really like those modern MonsterVerse movies. I watched Monarch, the TV show on Apple, pretty good. I mainly watched it for Anna Sakai, to be fair,
right.
And she's also in Shogun right now. But I love them, so I'm looking forward to seeing Godzilla and King Kong team up against the bad guys. That'll be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
So
that's very pulpy.
And I imagine I'll be going by myself because I can't imagine my wife or my daughter have any interest in seeing the big lizard and the big monkey fighting anybody. They just think it's stupid and they don't understand. So. Oh, well, here are the fine folks keeping our show on the air real quick. We got to thank the great Allison Rich, who we just say great things about every week, and she keeps finding ways to make us say even greater things. Also, awesome Leah G., Rich Hammett, Ben, A View from the Peanut Gallery, Rose, Debbie, No Spoilers, Norris, who I probably disappoint on a weekly basis, Dragon Con DeLynn, Emma Jane Alexander, Emmanuel Seaman, Grumpy Old SGU Fan, Jalja, Mond06, Michael O'Connor, Middle Age Geek Tim, Pete, they listed the books, but still didn't say which one they were going to read first. Furman, I think we've addressed that, Pete. Steve Palmer, Stu Parker, The Geek Boy, Una Vez, and Una Luna Azul, Drazi Green. Heather and Yancey Steingrabber, Ice Cream Clone with Boba Fett Head, Michael Halbrook, and New Pulp Reader and Writer. We thank you guys all so, so very much. Now, this is where we get to their comments, because our patrons always have great comments, and we like to see what they have to say about our most recent episode. So, by the way, our Patreon page now has a shop feature, a tab. So if we want to, we can create a store for the White Rocket Babylon 5 Review Podcast and create things that JMS can then sue us for for trying to sell.
Oh, we can put those Team Andy t-shirts up there that I designed.
There we go. I think that would sell better than anything else we could put up, honest to goodness. All right, so here's what the patrons had to say this week. And if you want to be able to leave comments and have them read on the air, join up and become a patron, and you'll get in here with the cool kids. Mondo Six says, Sinclair becoming Ayn LeShach Nahn later until Zah, we had that conversation last time, comes from the book To Dream in the City of Sorrows. I thought it probably did, but that's fine. Clarification is good, so that's cool.
Yep.
Ben says, Interlac, because we had a conversation about that. Had we ever mentioned Interlac before? Interlac is a universal language created for interspecies communication. It was mentioned in Lines of Communication, which I believe is also known as the first episode where the Drock show up, and then Delenn blows them straight out of our galaxy. When Lanier sent a message to the Drock in Interlac instead of Minbari because it's easier to translate, I think it also was so they wouldn't know who the ship belonged to, right?
Right.
Let's see. Allison has a
looking out on that one.
Yeah. Allison has a missive here. She says, regarding the Pachmurai finding their good place within the Rangers, I have another good idea for them. Get them to eat the evidence of those baddies who are killed by the Rangers. Okay, I didn't know the Rangers were going around killing people. But if this is true, then she's onto something. I just wasn't aware.
I'm not sure that they're out there putting the hit on people either. I don't know.
Well, they got to do what they got to do. It's rough out there in the rim of the galaxy, man. You got to it's kill or be killed out there, apparently. Also regarding Lockley, she's very much a by the book person. From her position with the Earth War and also in her view regarding station security, she's well within her rights to go against Delenn in their handling of Ranger Down Below matter. But she's overruled and Delenn pulls rank on her. I have to give her some respect here, she says. She's trying to run the station according to how it's supposed to be run. However, despite the presidential promise to let her run things as she sees fit, she's thwarted by the shifting non-black and white situation. Sheridan let the telepath stay over her objections. Delenn pulls rank on her. Garibaldi gives her grief at every turn. There's no firm boundaries there, I'm sure. And this is what we were just talking about, the complex Venn diagram. We were just talking about that. She's right on it here. Yep. There's no firm boundaries there. I'm sure that she's not alone among her staff feeling frustrated. Now, I agree. Go ahead.
Some people cheer her when she gives that speech to the Garibaldi during breakfast.
Some
people clap when she leaves. So yeah, there are plenty of people there that are frustrated right alongside of her.
Yeah. Although some of them may be Clark supporters that didn't leave when Sheridan gave him the chance to leave. Remember?
Right.
Severed Dreams.
Okay. Yep.
One of them clapped and then probably went, oh crap, I just outed myself as a sleeper agent for Clark.
See, they don't wear the convenient like ball caps that people like that wear today.
I know it. Yeah, or the gold shoes. Let's see. We all saw and learned the lessons about how unquestionable order and unquestionable chaos doesn't really work. This is true. I think she'll end up finding that out as the season goes on, eh? And then she says, this is interesting, too. She says, Van, as for your only following orders comments, when you reach the next episode, Lockley will turn that argument on its head with a conversation with Sheridan. So maybe you'll soften your stance then. I'll be interested to hear. Does she mean it? Was there one in this episode that I'm supposed to be thinking of? Or the next one?
I believe the next episode. Because there wasn't anything in this episode.
I was going to say, Allison, well, there was an interesting Lockley-Sheridan conversation in this episode at the beginning, and it was the one that was about them being married, but it also talked about she did, you know, she gives her justification, and I if that's the conversation Allison's talking about, and it may not be, but if it is, I'll put it this way. I think that Lockley defends her position as well as that position can be defended, but that still doesn't mean I agree with it. It just means I think that's about as good of a job as you can do with it.
Right.
So take that for what it's worth. Let's see. Also very funny about DeLynn getting all huffy and finding out about who Lockley is. I figure John and DeLynn are even now with the hiding of information. It's realistic to see these very human sides to them. Even these people on pedestals have very human sides. A feet of clay, as Bob Geldof would call it. And I love how Bob Geldof, it's apropos to what she's saying here, that Bob Geldof famously said, he said something like, people want to say that I have something great, whatever, but he says, I still know that my socks still stink or something. I just, you know. So, good point.
I'm not familiar with that saying, but that's funny.
It's a great quote, and I'm totally ruining it, but he makes a parallel with, like, his socks stink and his feet versus something, you know, they want to say he has, you know, he's a saint or something, and he's like, but I don't think so because my socks still stink. Something like that. It's a really very, I have no words tonight. I'm sorry. Let me finish Allison's thing. She says, you'd think that DeLynn might have checked out just who Lockley was before she even stepped onto the station, though. She certainly must have been curious. And I agree. That is on DeLynn to not have done her homework before it got to be basically too late, huh?
Right.
So, all right. Last two comments from the listeners. The patrons. Ben says, as far as the Pachmara joining the Rangers, tell them they're welcome to join, but they have to follow the same rules as everyone else. And using them as couriers will only last a little while because they hide data crystals in dead animals that they end up eating. So, well, then they're hiding them in themselves, I guess, right?
There,
so
there you go. Yeah.
That's
it. I don't even want to think about using that crystal after that.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. And then finally, Drazi Green says, regarding your, I hate to use the word rant. No, Drazi Green, that's fine. I've been doing the football show, the sister show to this show that's the football show with John, for over 11 years now. And every several episodes, one of us has a rant, and we've embraced it. So we've embraced the term of the rant. By all means, you're welcome to describe my commentary that way. But Drazi Green says, regarding use of the word rant, regarding your rant, about the quality of this episode, we can only imagine the pressure JMS was under from the suits at TNT. With a shrinking budget, plus TNT probably wanting more Lost in Space Monster of the Week shows, which honestly I kind of agree with him at this point, it's no surprise some stinkers, quote unquote, got made. I imagine the budget was also too small to fund the actors playing the main characters like Londo and Jacquard appear in this episode. That said, I enjoyed your podcast this week. Again, that's the last one. I'm just sorry there weren't any Drazi Rangers. Oh, Drazi Rangers would be awesome because they would totally cheat and find ways to make it about it. And yeah, he says, I'm sure the Drazi Ranger motto would be, quote, all for one, one for all, and every Drazi for himself. Oh, that's so good. That's fantastic, Drazi Green. I'm glad we have Drazi. I'm glad we have a Drazi as a patron leaving comments, you know.
And Drazi Green, I think you need to go back and listen to Van during the Believers episode if you really want to hear a good rant.
Oh, gosh. That was my champion rant, yeah, because I just wrestled with that. I wrestled with that episode for what, 30 years or however long, and I finally just decided to take a stand. By golly, I'm not going to halfway it anymore. I was going to take a dang stand. So, all right, our next installment will cover 508 Secrets of the Soul. So I wrote down the name of the next episode, but not the name of the current episode. Way to go. So 508 Secrets of the Soul. We're just zipping right along through season 5. I guess I should be saying, hey, we need to slow down because we're going to get through season 5 in a hurry. And then I stop and think, we're going to get through season 5 in a hurry, so I don't want to slow down.
I don't see a downside to that, man.
I don't. Honestly, I think that once we kind of get to the end of the telepath plot, we should pause and maybe do a Stargate Universe or two, maybe, and whatever else, and then we'll come back hard with the second half of the season. Yeah. That makes sense?
I'm down with that.
Yeah, I do want to do Stargate Universe again before you forget everything. You probably already have.
That will let us wash the Byron out of our systems, and we can come back to Babylon 5 with a fresh... Because I've noticed the past couple of weeks we've been getting a little nasty.
Show. I'm afraid
I don't like doing that.
No, I'm afraid that our listeners and our patrons are going to get turned off. And but they know we're being honest, right? We're not going to lie just for the sake of keeping them happy. We're going to tell how it is. It's just how it is.
Yeah.
So, all right. I don't have any spoilers. Do you have any spoilers for this episode?
Oh, golly, I can't think of any.
Yeah, I'm not even going to sound the alarm. I'm not even going to sound the jump gate.
Yeah. Right. I think what would happen? Our ship would blow up.
It would, yeah. Oh, and we still wouldn't know who planted the explosives, dang it.
Right.
You know, it'd be funny if
does that plot point ever come up? No, wait. Let's go to the spoiler space because I want to discuss this because I don't remember much about season 5.
Jump gate activated.
All right, we're going into spoiler space just to answer Andy's question. Does it ever get answered?
Is that ever addressed?
I feel like kind of, but not immediately and not directly. I think it has something to do with the Drock. It has something to do with the Regent. I just don't understand why they'd want to kill him and then turn around and make him their puppet.
Right. That makes me think that it was like what Lockley said, one of the thousands of other enemies that he's made over the years.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out the hard way, the slow way.
Yeah.
But we will find out, I'm pretty sure. So.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. That's it. No, me too. I agree. So, all right. Well, actually, while we're in spoiler space, I'll say also, we've got like a handful more telepath episodes to go.
Yeah.
And then it comes to a big blazing end.
Yeah.
And at that point, we can pause and maybe do a couple of Stargates. Does that sound good?
That sounds good to me.
Oh, thank goodness. All right. I can use that little break. All right. I think that we're going to wrap up there then. Join us in 2 weeks for 508 Secrets of the Soul. If only that meant that that Earth, Wind, and Fire was guest starring. That would be exciting.
But dude, that would be cool.
It would be cool. Instead, we eventually get, I guess, Rebo and Zooty. So.
Rebo and Zooty.
Ugh. Zoot, zoot. Jesus. All right.
Hey.
On that note, Andy, yeah. I'm going to cut
thanks
you.
Thanks for reminding me of that one. Just when I was getting all excited fresh perspective.
Oh, gosh. Andy, all I can say to you at this point is zoot, zoot.
Zoot, zoot, indeed.
Oh, my gosh. All right. We're going to get on out of here for another couple of weeks. We'll see you guys soon. Andy, have a good night.
All right. You too, man. Take care.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.